Bears. Jennifer Stone filling in today for Dave Pezzo. Tom Brown is also joining me, and we also do have a special guest that we'll get to in a moment. But before that, I just wanted to touch on a few things that it's a good time to, I guess, air our thoughts when we get to do this show. So appreciate Dave taking some time off and allowing us to do this. If you have email, jstone@petsofinancial.net, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And we're love the phone calls, always do, but we're going to kind of hold off until the top of the hour because I do want to spend some time with our guests here. But I also wanted to touch on a few things. I have to listen and agree with Dave on a lot. This whole fire hose of information that is thrown at us day by day, I find myself getting caught up in it too, which is unusual. Usually I love this season. I love election season. I grew up around it. I was involved in politics since I was a little kid. I love the debate. I love the conflict, but in a good way. Seems this year that, I don't know, it seems like we're more angry than interested. We used to be interested in views, different opinions. We like to talk to people and debate, sit down and have a lengthy discussion. My dad and I, we were very different in our political views. He believed very strongly in how he felt, and I believe that as well. But the one thing he always did was sit down with me, and I know he was my dad, and say, how do you feel about that? Why don't you explain your point of view? Let's talk about it. But we find this even going into our clients now. We do have clients that, you know, we call them kind of like, I don't know if this is the right word or not, but almost like indicator clients. Anytime the market has a big up or a big down, they're concerned. They want to talk about it. They want to try to figure out, why is it going up? Why is it going down? And really want to dive in. Then we have others that just go with everything. They're very tolerant to ups and downs and volatility. But this year it's different. Everyone wants to know more. I don't know if it go back to the whole analytics of social media. And there is a show that I've actually watched called Social Dilemma that it does talk about this and how the people that created the thumbs up and how they find things. And, you know, if you look at something about Trump, everything on your feed's going to be that. If you look at something about Biden, everything on your feed's going to be that. So what happens is you'd get the constant input of agreement. So you don't stop to think about how does it affect others. I never thought, ever thought that we'd be so anti-law enforcement. I never, ever thought that we would see people rioting and protesting and getting on people for their political beliefs of wearing a hat, yelling at a kid for wearing a hat of his political choice. I never worried when I walked around with different people on my shirt or my hats or did lit drops or parades or whatever we might have done growing up. I never worried that someone would be so angry that they would spit on me or react violently. It's weird. I don't know if it's the COVID because we're all tied in and locked up so much and we can't get out and enjoy things. Or is it because, I don't know. I don't know what it is. So when you start to look at this and you say, what can we do to focus on things that are more exciting, more fun, more enjoyable, and less political and less negative. When Tom and I were here last time, we did this too. We tried to talk on more optimistic things and getting out and enjoying life and going hiking, just whatever it was that made you happy and away from all the noise. One of the things that we find and we really enjoy and Petso has been a part of is the Children's Museum of Idaho. They too have been affected by COVID and having to shut down, and how do they keep their kiddos safe and their guests safe when they come into the museum? How are they able to get through this and hopefully maintain what we need desperately in Idaho, which is early childhood education? We have to get these kids involved. I was blown away with the statistics that we're last in the nation in early childhood education. With that, I'm going to stop talking about it because I do find it very interesting and I love the place myself. But what we have today is Erin Brown. You might recognize the last name. She kind of is related to someone who is also in here with me, too. She is a program director at the museum. She has been involved with this since day one. She was there with the building of it, creating it, and making it a reality. So I wanted to have her come on and share with us how she's been able to maneuver through this, what they've done to change how it works so that the doors can remain open and everyone can remain safe. So first, what is the Children's Museum of Idaho?
Well, good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good.
So a children's museum, unless you've been to one or you've seen it online, you might not understand what it is. Because you hear the word museum and you think, oh, we can't touch anything. But a children's museum is very interactive. We have 31 different exhibits, and our whole setup is child and grown-up, whether it's their parents or grandparents or a nanny, can come in and they can dream and imagine and be anything they want to be. We have a dentist's office where you can go and learn about different drinks and sugars, and you can pretend to brush a dinosaur's teeth. You can be an astronaut. You can learn about farming. We have, in each exhibit is different STEM activities, which is sorting and engineering and math and science. We have a wonderful room that was sponsored by the Idaho STEM Action Center, and that's where we have programs and we have puzzles. Our whole setup is it's family oriented and you're doing it together. It's not a drop off your kids, sit on a bench, you know, scroll through your social media place. We want everybody together playing and learning, because parents are kids' first teachers, and we think that they will learn a lot from you and we will learn a lot from kids, because we kind of, as we get older, we forget the simple pleasures of stuff. So it is fun. Our best moments are when we hear that giggling, parents and kids giggling together.
Tell me what STEM is. We hear that all the time, that term thrown around, and if you're not in that educational side, I don't know that everyone knows what that means.
So STEM, you'll see STEM and you'll see STEAM. So STEM is science, technology, engineering, math. STEAM is the same thing, except the A is the arts.
Okay.
And so it's just kind of more focused like that. A lot of people, when you come in, we ask people to tidy up before they move to the next exhibit. Like in our pizza place, we have all these toppings. And we ask people to tidy up before they move to the next session. Well, sorting is a great math activity. That's a beginning math activity.
So the age for this is younger, correct?
Right. Our target age is 2 to 8. Now, we do have littler kids come in, and it's fun because we watch them from babies, and then they start toddling around, and then they get older and older. But we do have things for littles, and then we do have things for older siblings, too. We have some puzzles. We have games.
Good. So the main focus on this, because I did read, and it was put out by Annie Casey, so I believe that it's a legitimate source, because I was a little bit shocked, I guess, that Idaho actually ranks last in early childhood education. Is that correct?
Yes. So they did a study in 2017, and it said 65% of 3- and 4-year-olds in Idaho haven't had some kind of preschool. They don't have those school readiness skills. So when they show up at school, they're not ready.
So when they get to school, what is the most important thing for them when they're transitioning into school that they know? Is it just like colors and shapes and that kind of thing? And that's why it's so important to be involved in, like you said, sorting and those type of activities?
So a huge thing for little kids is their grip strength, which you don't really think about, but to write, you need to be able to grip that pencil. And for us, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but if kids are not using their arms, if they're not, like, Play-Doh is a great activity, and Play-Doh's messy, slime is messy, but it's great for their arm strength or picking up little things. Fine motor skills for kids is so important. So sorting, playing with blocks, Play-Doh, those kind of things. A lot of parents don't want their kids to use scissors at home. Cutting is a huge skill.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, come see us. We let them use scissors. wait, safely, of
course.
Yeah,
exactly. No running, right?
No running
at all. All right. So tell me about the programming, because I, of course, watch the feeds and want to keep up on what's going on. What type of programming? Because I know that's your baby, and that's the one thing that you are really a big part of what you do. What type of programming is at the museum?
So right, things have kind of changed because of COVID. Before COVID, I do story and project every day, because kids hearing words and just being read to is a huge part also. So we have story time, then we do a project. I was bringing in presenters, just across the board presenters. We had Irish dancers, we had a chemistry teacher from BSU, just trying to hit all these different things because you never know what kids are going to be interested in. Mm-hmm. So right now, it's hard to get presenters in because their businesses don't want them to come out to the public, which I totally understand. I get that. So right now we're running camps, and we have camps every week, and they're different themed, but I try to sneak some school readiness skills in there. Like, we'll do cutting, we'll make all kinds of things. And, mm-hmm. you know, kids, if they've never been in school, they don't necessarily know how to raise their hand. I mean, I've had kids that have never gone to school before. They'll come to my camps and, hey, you know, just little things like that. So we're sneaking in those school readiness things.
So my understanding of how you've been trying to structure the reopening, I know you've been open for a while, is trying to follow what schools are doing as well. And then I know masks are required, correct? How are you handling the whole COVID and keeping people safe?
So we're following what Ada County is doing. Right now, the Ada County order is for everybody 2 and up. So when you're inside the museum, we require a mask for everybody 2 and up. If you go out in the outside exhibits, you're welcome to take off your mask. We encourage social distancing. We are constantly cleaning. Every night we have a spray that we disinfect. And then every 10 minutes we'll shut down a section, disinfect it, sanitize it, let it sit for 10 minutes, and then we'll go to the next one. We have sanitizer. We have hand sanitizer everywhere.
So as a community, what can we do to help the museum keep going and stay open? What can we do to help you?
Oh, well, thank you. So we have, you know, we did have to shut down for 2 months, and our attendance is down right now. So what people can do is, we are a nonprofit, so we depend on donations. We have a donation button on our website, and that is cmidaho.org. You can make a donation on that. You can send us a check. You can come into the museum. We're always looking for grants from businesses. Our executive director is working very, very hard on that. We are still, we are having special events, but we can't have them as big as we used to. We have to follow the 50 people. So if you follow us on our social media, you'll see those special events. And we're just working really hard to keep this place open for our families, because we love our families, but we do depend on donations and grants and things of those nature.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to find out more what else you want us to know about you and how it's affecting the community, how COVID affected everything, okay? So we're going to take a quick break. Calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or shoot me an email, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petso today. Tom Brown will be joining us at the top of the hour, and we're going to have some interesting discussions on, well, trivia and history of the stock market. It's very fun to go back, and we were digging through this, and I keep thinking, Tom and I don't know how many times we said, really, I didn't know that, or wow, that's cool. But before that, we're going to continue to talk to Aaron Brown, who, obviously, last name, there's a little bit of a relationship here, who is the program director of the Children's Museum of Idaho. And we're just getting some information on them to expose them a little bit more, because it's an amazing thing they've got going on. So Aaron, we were talking a bit about the programming, but you know, one thing we forgot to ask you is, where is the Children's Museum?
So we're located in Meridian, just right off the Meridian exit, by Winco, and Home Depot is right there. Our address is 790 South Progress Avenue. So you take the Meridian exit, look for McDonald's, Winco, we are right there.
One thing that I love to see, partly because I'm leaning towards, but we're not sure yet, we have a little dog that I'm wanting to become a therapy dog, but he has a lot of work to do, believe me. But Go Team Therapy seems like they're there frequently, which has to be a huge thing.
Yeah, so they are great. So it's called Go Team Idaho. They have many, many therapy dogs, and their handlers are just wonderful. They come in every second Thursday of the month at 1 o'clock. They bring as many dogs as people sign up to bring. And these dogs have been trained and the handlers are trained. They're wonderful. We have from little teeny tiny dogs to a huge Newfoundland that comes in. They come in, they set up in the museum, and those dogs just pretty much lay down. And kids are, and parents, they're welcome to come in and pet to them. Right now, because a lot of kids are doing homeschool, they will bring their books in and they will read to the dogs because those dogs are great listeners.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Yeah, it's great. And sometimes people will bring in their kiddos or even adults that might not know about dogs or they're a little bit timid around them, and talking to the handler and being these dogs, by the time they leave, they're just snuggled up to them, loving on them.
That's great. I want to get into the programming, but another thing, because I keep thinking of all these fun things that I keep seeing.
You
hatch chickens. You have a lizard. What else do you have going on?
Yes. So we do hatch chicks. We have our bearded dragon, Sammy, and then we have a tortoise, Larry, and we have fish. They don't have names because there's too many of them, but the aquarium has helped us with the fish. So we have all kinds of little creatures around.
So tell me about your upcoming events. I know you have the superhero run, which we helped on last year. Come on, that was really cool. So you have that. And what else do you have going on?
Yeah, so our superhero fun run is on the 3rd, and we're still taking registration for that. I love that. That's just kind of my baby. I love it. We have a monster mash coming up, just a kid-friendly on the 30th, October 30th. We're going to have games and crafts, and, you know, we're encouraging everybody to come up, and we are selling tickets for that. That will be an evening event because we do have to limit it how many people can be in the museum right now, but the tickets are on sale on our website. And we just want to have a good time and kids just have some fun. I think we all just need to have some fun right now.
I agree with that. As you can hear, we're at the top of the hour. We need to cut out for the break, but I did want to thank Erin very much for coming. If you want more information, it's cmi.org, correct?
CMIdaho.
Look them up there. I'm sure she'd be willing to answer any questions you have too. And if you have anything to share with them, go ahead and look at them on social media. And thank you again. We're going to cut out, and when we get back, we're going to talk history of the market as well as some interesting trivia that we found while going through this. And we're going to keep it positive. So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Hetzel this morning, along with Tom Brown. Want to again thank Erin Brown for coming in today. She is a program director for the Children's Museum of Idaho. And always remember, sponsorship is great. They have really cool exhibits out there that you can put your name on as advertising. So if there's any corporate sponsors that are big into the early childhood education, STEM, those type of programming, let her know. It's super important to keep this stuff going on. It's the first children's museum in the state of Idaho. Super important to get these kids ready and prepped for going off to traditional school. So again, thank you, Erin. It was wonderful, and we'll keep us posted on how things are going out there.
Yeah, and one quick thing on that is on any donations you make, the donations do qualify for the education credit on the state income tax. So if you're married filing jointly, you can make a donation up to $2,000, and you get up to $1,000 credit, or 50% of that up to $2,000. So if you're single, that's up to $1,000 to get up to a $500 credit. So it's a great way to give. And if you're actually one person that's still itemizing, then you get to itemize and you get the credit too. So you get a great opportunity there.
Perfect. All right. And also, we do want your calls. Really, one of the questions I want to throw out there to you is, how did you get interested in investing? What was the first investment that you ever made? What was that event that said, hey, I'm going to do this? This is something I really want to do. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Or you can email me, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Morning. This is your Farm Tribe. How y'all doing?
We are great. How about
Thanks,
you?
Jim.
Fine. Thank you. Well, I'll tell you, back in the 60s, when I was starting college, I majored in accounting, and my father had given me 3 shares of RCA, and God knows what they'd be worth with today if I'd have kept it. But anyway, one of the most important words I learned in my life was in Business 101, and the word was utility. And that's the, you know, what service you get from something, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you had a ton of gold, there's no utility. It just sits there. But
yep.
I've got a little cloth backpack that I, you know, wear while riding my bicycle, which has a hell of a lot more utility than a ton of gold.
Good analogy, yep.
So anyway, later, I wanted a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And I figured the utility of a reel-to-reel tape recorder was a lot more than 3 shares on a piece of paper. So I sold the stock and bought a reel-to-reel tape recorder.
How old were you when you did that? I'm just curious. Do you remember?
When? In about 1966.
Okay, so you, so pretty young?
Yeah, I was,
What, you were 13?
No, I was born in 46.
Okay. That's about right, though. I mean, 20 years old, you people usually like to buy stuff then, so that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to record and stuff like that.
Yep.
And so my theory on investing, and my father was a CPA, and for one thing, I don't have, you know, I don't have greed and I don't have fear. But my theory of investing is I like to collect stocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I buy a lot of stocks. And if the economy is good and it's a good company, the stock price will go up and then the money will come.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got a unique way of picking stocks. For one example, one of the last ones I got was Xerox. And I was reading this book about this guy. He was a guy named John List. And he murdered his entire family in the early 70s. He was German extraction, German Lutheran, and he was an accountant, didn't believe in computers, so I could identify him there with him there. I didn't identify with him in his murdering thing.
I hope not.
But I'm reading this book, and he applies for a job at Xerox in Rochester, New York. And I'm thinking, Xerox. Now, to me, I hadn't thought about Xerox, but Xerox, the name Xerox, is pretty much like Coca-Cola. And my advisor is with Edward Jones, and they only, you know, they have a select amount of stocks that they, I like to use the word push. She doesn't like that, but, you know. So anyway, I mean, she told me I was the only one of her clients that had Xerox. And so anyway, so I bought Xerox. Right after that, recently, I decided I wanted to buy a Canadian bank. So I looked into Royal Bank of Canada. That was like $70 a share. And then Bank of Montreal, $60 a share. And then Toronto Dominion, 40 or 50. Well, anyway, I ended up buying 100 shares of Bank of Nova Scotia. So that's how I choose stocks.
Hmm. Yeah. But what made you decide to invest? I mean, why did you, was it because your dad gave you RCA? What was that event that said, you know what, I'm going to start doing this and start, as you put it, collecting stocks?
Well, you know, it's in the jobs I've worked at, most of them haven't been 9 to 5, right? I mean, for instance, getting a regular paycheck for me was boring, you know, and a CD is boring. And I do believe in the economy. I believe in equity. I know how balance sheets are supposed to be and all that kind of thing. And so, it's part of my DNA, I guess. I mean, it's just exciting to do it, even when the stock market goes down, you know, buy more stocks, whatever. So I'm not looking at that all the time. In fact, I'm not looking at what I've got. I'm looking at what I want to get. So that, you know, I'll be hoping that there'll be a dip in the stock market when I want to buy something.
Perfect. All right, Jim. We always love talking with you.
Take care.
You too. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just want to let you know that starts a whole new investing trend.
Mm-hmm.
If I read biographies about mass murderers, find out where they were, and buy stocks in those companies.
That's a great way to start getting recommendations.
That could be a weird index.
It could be. It could be. And you know they make ETFs on everything. Yeah. Is that the new one?
Yeah. Maybe a Manson ETF.
There you go.
Like
there you go.
I'm all over that.
Right. So it is interesting to me when you start to look back on how long things have been around, right? Like investing in Wall Street. And it was funny, when we were going through some of these questions that we kept finding, and we dig deeper and deeper and deeper, and Tom actually found a book that he's like, oh, I need to buy this book, because it was a very interesting history points on the market. And one of the things that, I don't remember who it was, but some trader that was actually making the trades on the New York Stock Exchange said that insider trading at that time was frowned upon, but it wasn't illegal.
That's exactly right. And the what he was quoting was Joe Kennedy, who was using insider trading to make stock trades in the 20s. And again, it was
frowned upon.
It was kind of looked down upon, but I don't think he worried too much. From what I've heard of Joe Kennedy, he worried about what people frowned at him about.
Right. So this is interesting. So we're going to share a few different historical points and trivia things that we found cool. So please, if you have stuff to add, call us 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Email me, jstone@petsofinancial.net. So Wall Street got its name back in 1652. And this was because they actually built a wooden wall to keep out, basically to keep the Dutch settlers built this wall to keep out, I'm tying my tongue up here, mm-hmm. Tom. Anyways, they were trying to keep out England and the Netherlands because they were fighting. So they were trying to build a wall to keep them from invading.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a street.
And there was a street. And that's how Wall Street got its name. Something as simple as that. But think about how long ago that was when mm-hmm. you talk about going through history. The New York Stock Exchange started in 1792.
Yeah.
That's crazy, right? When you think about it, that was just not quite 20 years from when we became an actual country.
Mm-hmm. And it was just people getting together.
Mm-hmm. Then you actually had, it was privately owned, and you had to buy a seat on the exchange up until 2006 when it became publicly owned. And there were 1,336 seats on the exchange pretty consistently. It started with a few less than that. And it was only $4,000 only to buy in.
But it was a business, right? You could buy in, so you then, the people would come to you to be able to trade stocks on the exchange. And that's mm-hmm. why they bought seats, right?
Yep. And they were very, very valuable. Mm-hmm. The most expensive one was sold in 1999 for $2.65 million mm-hmm. just to get a seat on the exchange to trade stocks. So when you think about originally being $4,000, if you went up and said, okay, time value of money, how much would that be worth today? Or in 1999, when that one went for $2.6 million, it was actually $100,000 a seat. So think about how expensive that was.
Mm-hmm.
When they sold, they actually were able to capture a bit more than that because you got stock in the New York Stock Exchange as well as cash. So they bought these people out of the market and took their seats when they became public. It's just interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. I think that's what people don't really understand is how the market really works mm-hmm. behind the scenes, or worked, you know, and how it changed. How, you know, nowadays you don't have many people on the floor screaming at each other. It isn't like that anymore, where you have people doing that. But, you know, the old days where you'd call in an order and someone would run down with that ticket for your order onto the floor and to buy, to get your sell. And it might take a while for you to find out if it sold and when it sold and how much it was. And now you just push a button and it's almost instantaneous most of the time.
Yeah. And to me, this is also a very interesting point too, because women haven't been involved as much in the market as they are now. But the first seat owned on the New York Stock Exchange by a woman wasn't until 1967. So the New York Stock Exchange started in 1792. The first woman to own a seat was in 1967. That's just crazy when you think about all these mm-hmm. numbers. And it seems like that wasn't that long ago when you think about 1967. But mm-hmm. think how many years. Yeah, I wasn't. I was almost. I was this close to being alive. So it's just very interesting on some of these data points. We also sit here and we think about some of these quotes. And this is one of the ones that I think is very interesting in the time we're in right now. So we all hear this. Nothing is guaranteed in the world except death and taxes. But that entire quote by Benjamin Franklin actually was, our new constitution is now established and has an appearance that promises permanency. But in this world, nothing can be certain except death and taxes. With that, I think we'll take a break. And when we come back, we're going to share a few more interesting trivia points. Would love phone calls from you telling us how you got started in investing. What made you want to join into all this? 580-KIDO, 580-5436, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo along with Tom Brown. It's like a beautiful fall day out there. I love fall. I really do.
I love when I got up this morning and went outside and it was just like, I love this. You know, I love that feel. You know, that cool feel.
I do too. And you can go outside and take walks now in the evenings. You don't have to wait till 9 o'clock at night. So it's not so hot. It's just, I love this time of year.
Yeah.
All right. So we are talking about something I find fascinating. And I know Tom does too, because he and Dave are really into history a lot. I am as well. But I find these topics with the market history especially fascinating because of what we do. So please call us. Let us know what triggered you to start investing. What was that first stock that you bought? 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email me, jstone@petzofinancial.net. So now that we've talked about the New York Stock Exchange a little bit, where Wall Street got its name, the next thing I really want to talk about is the Dow. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is the market that everyone looks at when they're measuring what did the market do today. The interesting thing about it, it's only 30 stocks, but it's still the one we all focus on. I think it's just because it's the largest number, so that's the one that everyone goes to.
And just because people have done it so long.
And been around so long.
They don't, yeah.
Yeah. So the Dow was actually introduced in 1896. Started with only 12 stocks. Interesting thing, one of them was around and in the indice until just recently, 2018, before it was pulled out. Right. That's GE.
Yeah.
So you think about a modern day company that we all are aware of was one of the founding components of the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Yeah, and it has been a, you know, like part of America forever, you know.
Until it was removed.
Everything that we can think of in our houses, military, energy, and now it's not as relevant as it used to be.
Nope. Also, I found that it was funny to listen to the names of the 12 original members of the Dow because they're so, you know, we have these fascinating names of companies now. We have Tesla and Facebook and all these interesting names. Back then it was American Cotton, American Sugar, American Tobacco.
A lot of imagination.
I know. U.S. Leather, U.S. Rubber. It's just so funny when you think about how basic these names were.
This is my favorite. Let's see. Chicago Gas Distilling and Cattle Feeding.
Yeah. It's just so funny when you think about it.
We've got to cover everything we do. You know, just make sure people understand what we do.
Yeah. So when you look at that, you think about how these companies were back then and how basic stuff that they did. I mean, they really did. They just made leather. They just made rubber. They just did these very basic things. But those were the components of the Dow. Interesting thing, too, that back in 1932, ExxonMobil was added. A decade ago, just 10 years ago, it was the most valuable company in the world.
2010.
And now it's out of the index. They removed it in August of this year. And it was replaced by Salesforce and Walgreens. I don't know. Some of this is just interesting when you think about how much the world's changed.
And how quickly. It's amazing just technology and how much that has taken over. And then as some of these companies are just becoming more and more not relevant as they used to be because the energy isn't as, or oil is starting to become more and more insignificant.
And these are some interesting data points as well. The Dow first closed over 100 in 1906, closed over 1,000 in 1972, over 10,000 in 1999, and Friday it closed over 27,000.
Yep.
So we talk about things like with gold. Gold was at 800 an ounce and it was there forever and ever. You just think about how, yes, right now, I know, everyone can argue the fact that gold's doing great. But the whole point to this is look what the market's done. Look at what it's made up of, what it's comprised of. Sometimes I think we forget that it's actually a basket of great companies in those indices.
Great businesses. Yep. And just like Jim said just a little bit ago, gold has no utility. It just sits there. Until you sell it, it's not going to do anything for you.
Also, in terms of months, everyone talks about historic performance, and this one was interesting too. September is the month of negative everything, I guess. So we just went through one, and historically speaking, that's the worst month of the Dow ever. But once we say that, everybody's going to say, well, why don't we sell the 1st of September if statistically we know it's going to go down? Because there's up good months, too. You can't time the market that way. But just looking at the numbers and pulling them apart, I found that fascinating as well.
It is interesting. I think it's because all the kids are depressed that they went back to school.
Could be.
So they told the parents to sell out. It's all going down.
They actually said it's funny. That's not kind of not that exaggerated. When I looked at it, they actually said it's after summer you start to look at your investments again and start to actually review and make changes. Yeah. So even though you said that as a joke, I don't know that it necessarily is. People start paying attention again when they get back from summer. Right. And maybe that's it. But they say there's really nothing that triggers why September is a negative month.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I found that was fascinating. Also, when you look at overall the different companies and what we should buy into, it changes all the time. Times change. So buying and holding is, of course, the way you normally should do things, but you don't just put it away and never look at it. We've had clients come in a lot with old stock certificates that they just want to know if they're worth anything, and they're not. A lot of them are worthless.
Yeah, I just had that happen last week. Brought in a bunch of stock certificates for these energy companies in Canada and looked them up, worth a penny. And he said one time that was worth $35 a share, and he had like 2,000 of them.
Yeah, but then you lose it and you didn't pay attention, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and that is one important thing. If you are sitting on stock certificates, or your grandparents have stock certificates in a safe deposit box or in a drawer, make sure that they get those deposited into a brokerage account. Dealing with them after death is a real pain.
All right, we're going to take our final break of this half hour. When we come back, we're going to share a few more interesting facts on the market, and please give us a call. We're running low on calls here, you guys. We need a few more. 580-KIDO, 580-5436, jstone at petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petso along with Tom Brown this morning. We are talking history of the market and interesting facts. So if you have anything you'd like to add, please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or jstone at petsofinancial.net. So another interesting fact we found was, who's the first American billionaire? The names are very well known that they give out. So we kind of guessed this before, but weren't sure. Mm-hmm. So there's two that they kind of argue about: Henry Ford and John Rockefeller.
Yep. I thought it was going to be Andrew Carnegie when we first came up, because I thought he was. But
yep.
Obviously, the other one that's in the list is J.P. Morgan, and all those were alive, and they all were either working against each other or same at the same period of time. So it's really interesting, the emergence of the Industrial Revolution and how these four came, and then obviously Henry Ford and John D. just beat him across the line.
I guess
I'm
they
sure
did.
They probably all became billionaires, but
at some point, yeah, it was interesting because I ran this past my husband last night, and he named all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know which one was first, right? But he named all four of the people on the list. And then another one to add was Vanderbilt, right? But he wasn't one of this, which I found was interesting because, again, times in investing, women were later to get into this game. So I found it interesting that the first woman-owned brokerage firm was in 1870. And this part's really interesting because you think back about
this
the time.
Weird.
It is a little weird, but you think about Winchester and all the things they talk about with her doing seances and all that to get to her husband. Anyways, but they actually connected through him, Vanderbilt, through seances, these two women targeted at him through seances. And one of them eventually became his lover, but that's how he gave them money to keep their firm open.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what was more effective, the seances or
The girlfriend. I'm not sure either.
So
this is Tom's baby. So we're going to kind of like, he's going to be running with this one a little bit more. It's taxes and how many federal tax brackets we have, how taxes were created, what the root name taxes came from.
Right. So anyway, taxes, and I didn't know this. I mean, you don't really look this up, but I thought it was really interesting that taxes actually come from a Latin word named called taxo, which makes sense. It means I estimate. And that's what we'd all like to do, just estimate our taxes. Let's estimate them at zero.
But what happens if you do that, Tom?
Yeah, sometimes someone might send you a letter.
And you have to answer those, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so they don't care for estimates so much. I guess they lost that part of the thing. But it's also interesting that tax, so that's where the word tax is originated from, but it's also the same lingo that taxi cab came from. So the fee that you're charged or the fare that you're charged for a taxi cab originated with the word taxo, that's Latin. So there's currently seven tax brackets. There has been numerous times in the past where there's been, you know, upwards of 15 to even more than that, you know, going back to the 50s and so forth. I was just looking up that this morning. The tax rate, the marginal tax rate in 1953 was 93%. That's the highest marginal tax rate.
Wow.
For income over $200,000.
Wow.
Now, not too many people paid that because not too many people were making more than $200,000. And that was only the marginal part. And the effective tax rate was a lot lower than that. But just that that was on the books, that that was actually in the tax code, is amazing. That is really amazing.
Didn't you tell me, though, that income tax really started in, like, 1913?
Well, that's where the modern tax
code
or the modern tax law started in the 16th Amendment, was ratified in 1913. The actual first income taxes that were ever imposed in America was during the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln actually signed the law to do that. But it didn't last. So that income tax died out after the war ended. And then the modern income tax is started in 1913.
Interesting. I guess it's interesting, right? Tom likes his taxes. But it is interesting where it came from, so I'm teasing you.
I think it's interesting that taxes are a pretty dry subject. But if you think about it, taxes were really a part of our founding, you know, a big part of why America's America, mm-hmm. right? Boston mm-hmm. Tea Party is about taxes on tea. We didn't want to be imposed. We didn't want to have an eye estimate of how much they should pay England. And that was one of the big reasons that we chose to start the American Revolution was of taxes.
So well, that's a lot
it
of
is part of our
history,
country, whether
yeah.
we like it or not.
And that's a big debate now, too, mm-hmm. right? What are we talking a lot about now is taxes.
And if you go back to into the Bible times, what were the most hated people around? The tax collectors.
Yes, they were.
So yeah. it's not anything new.
No. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Jennifer. How you doing, darling?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, just dealing with first world problems, making sure my sauna gets heated up properly before I jump in it.
That's important, though. You don't want it to be cold.
Well, the rocks don't put off the steam unless you get it done properly.
Gotcha.
So. But you were talking about how'd you get started in investing.
Uh-huh.
And I go back to when I got to Mountain Home, assigned there from tech school, and my boss... Every Friday, well, we got paid on the 1st and 15th, and my boss always kept money, cash on hand, and all the dumb airmen would run out of their money before the payday came around again. So he would say, well, you got a nice rifle there. Go ahead, and I'll hold it for you until payday gets around here and give you $20 to go buy beer.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up with the nicest weapons, firearms collection, and you know, gogs here and there, but... Just it drove home the point of always have money.
Yes. Yep. Very important.
Yeah. And for Tom, thank you. You are part of my, when I set up dreams at night sometimes, it's winning the lottery and such.
I don't know if we want to go here.
And I say, who's the first person you're going to call?
Your tax guy.
How much tax do I hold aside here before I start wasting this great fortune I just got handed?
Yep, you are correct.
That's true.
It's a very good point.
But I'd rather if you don't think about me during your dreams, then you're gonna might keep that to ourselves.
Yeah. Good.
Well, it's just one of those things that, you know, sets up. You might as well dream about something happy instead of something that's the rest of the world trying to make you upset. And...
Oh, boy.
That's a good point, though. You're right. It's everything else is negative, right?
Yeah.
But the first stock I ever bought was Realty Income Corporation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just opened up a brokerage account and with TD Ameritrade, and I was trying to make sure everything worked. And that was a company that paid a monthly dividend.
Uh-huh.
And they reinvested those dividends.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure that the system worked. I'd never dealt with it before, and I didn't have any experience with stocks and all. And I just started chunking in $100 a month and watching what happens here and watch it grow. And now it's you know, just that extra money we got laying around now.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. And you just got to get started. Put a little bit away. It makes a huge difference, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Having the cash to do good things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
You know, Terry, it's interesting, too, when you talked about being paid in cash. So my first job while I was still in high school, actually, was counting money in the cash office at Kmart. So I would just show up first thing in the morning and count money, get all the cash registers up and going. And we paid in cash as well, because their thought was that the employees would spend the money before they left the store.
Hmm.
So we did. We kept bread pans full of cash, and we'd have to stuff paychecks with cash. Which was quite a fun job at 16. I thought it was very interesting, so I enjoyed it a lot. But it's funny when you think back about those and how they actually did business. So, yeah, I can understand.
I still remember there was a thing down at the air base, or the city of Mountain Home. It stopped appreciating the money that the air base put through town. And so the finance officer and the colonel said, got in a truckload, I don't know how much or how, of $2 bills. And part of every airman's pay was, a large pork chunk of it was paid in $2 bills. And you wanted to see the cash drawers in town fill up with $2 bills and people trying to find out what to do with them. And Mountain Home got a lot more appreciative of the airbase after that.
I bet they did. I bet they did. They could track where the money came from, couldn't they?
Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and, I'll listen to the rest of the program.
Appreciate it.
And you kids have fun and keep up the good work. And by the way, tell David, have a good day off. But he still didn't change the announcement of who we're calling here today.
I know. I think it's a lot of work, though, to do those voiceovers all the time because, you know, it just doesn't happen. So we'll just keep talking. How's that?
All right. You kids,
Terry,
have fun.
You, thanks. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Terry.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to share a few more facts of, you know, when the first mutual fund started, when the Roth IRA started, all the stuff that we find exciting. We hope you do at least find it interesting. But give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo along with Tom Brown. Phone number 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Talking history of the market, it's interesting going back and looking at different times of things that are important to us that we found interesting. One of them that I found was the first mutual fund.
Yeah, and I was wrong about this. We were talking about this, mm-hmm. And I thought it was...
If you hear the shock in Tom's voice that he says, I was wrong about this.
I just, you know, it's something, you get something, you just believe it's true so much that you just like, well, mm-hmm. I got that one and you're moving on and I was wrong.
You know, I think the reason why it hit, and I remembered it once I read it again, was when we take a lot of the tests that we take to become financial advisors, I actually do focus a bit on the history because we need to know some of the foundations of why things were created and who created them, just to make us have a deeper understanding. Everyone should do that in everything that they do. And plus, if you're passionate about this, learning more about it is an important thing. First mutual fund, Massachusetts Investor Trust, 1924. I'm sure the components and how it was made. I think it may even still be around.
Yeah, that mutual fund company is.
Yeah, I knew they were.
I don't know if that fund is, but I certainly know that they are. They're still pretty good. And then
American Funds was the other one, right?
American Funds had one that started in January 1st, 1934, which I think is pretty ironic that, hey, we're right in the middle of a depression. Let's start a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm. But another interesting fact to that, the best year in the market ever, it was up over 54%, was 1933.
Exactly. No one knows that for sure.
Nope. Some of these facts that you think about that you would never expect through that, kind of like right now what we're going through, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic and the market continues to hit record highs. Yep. So to take Dave's quote, which we all use all the time, what we know is really not worth knowing, because we would all assume that you should not be investing right now.
Right. But you always have to dig deeper, too, and find out, you know, why would that be in 1933? And one of the factors was that the market was closed for a long period of time, almost 5 months.
Yeah.
And can you think about that the market being closed for 5 months? We have a hard time if something happens and there's an issue for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine it just like it's not open?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we have certain protections that came into being because of, we talk about Black Monday, which was in October of 87. Again, October is a really interesting month as well. There's a lot of times, even though there's times when it's the best month, there's some big events that happened in October. October of 08 was a very down month. It was over 20% right before we bottomed out in March of 09. Then we had, back in that time, the market went down over 20% in one day. And what they think caused it, and again, there's a lot to go with this, was we had a lot of loss limits put in, limit orders, to try to stop the losses. But what happens, it hits that price and drops right through it. Mm-hmm. So it just spiraled the market down.
Right. And there was no, there's no protection.
Nope. There were no circuit breakers like we have now. There were no uptick rules, which we don't have any longer. But these were all put in to try to stop events like that from happening.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to the phones. Good morning, Richard. Hello?
My father was into stock. He was worked on airplanes in World War II, and he gave me stock so that I'd learn how to deal with stock and learn about it. Although he did all the trading, I just heard about it. But
happens.
It was the Flying Tigers, which was an air transport company. But later I found out that there was a Flying Tigers division in World War II of airplanes, and I suspect that there was some connection there.
Yeah, I'm sure. I believe that they were just a, once they got done, they took that name, and a lot of the pilots in that time formed that company. And I remember John Wayne had a movie about the Flying Tigers. That was a really popular movie.
Yeah, in the 60s, they were an air freight company. But the other thing is that when I was in high school, we had a finance class where we had an exercise to deal with stocks, and we had to pick out stocks out of the stock market. Mm-hmm. But they didn't give us a whole lot of training, so I was a little lazy, and I took the top one on the list, which was Abbott Labs.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it worked out real well, made a lot of money over the 90 days or whatever it was that we were doing. But
yeah, I remember my kids did that when they were in high school as well. They'd come home and they'd say, what should I pick? And they'd get overly excited. And then they would just go, I'm going to just do Google or Apple or whatever,
or
and
Disney.
Just pick
Disney
the and Disney. Disney's always the one that kids want to do, right? But it did create that desire to know a little bit. But then as soon as the class was over and whoever won, I don't think they ever asked again.
Right.
So.
But it kept the interest alive.
It did. Yep.
And curiosity, and it brought a lot along the line. So
I agree. And it's very interesting to get kids interested, right? You watch their eyes light up when you talk about it. And then they do get that desire to want to do this, and that's what we're trying to get.
Or they get that in their head that maybe they'll revisit that later in their life and go, oh, I remember. Mm-hmm. I know how that works.
Yeah, kind of like the coffee analogy, right? And many times as we sit there and we say, $5 a day on coffee, $72,000 spent in 40 years, or you invest it and end up with over $1.2 million. I don't know if coffee's that great if you think about it, right? So those kind of things that we can get kids to relate to get them interested, could change their trajectory for the rest of their life.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. All right. So another couple interesting things is we all talk about Roth IRAs. We say they're magic money because you put the money away after you pay tax. They grow tax-free. It comes out tax-free if used properly. Otherwise, after retirement or other exceptions that come in. But really, you got to leave it alone. Let it grow. Those formed and started in 1997.
Yeah, hasn't been too long ago. You were even born before that.
I was actually working with Dave then.
Crazy.
I know, right? It's hard to believe that how long. But yeah, you think about that. I remember when they did start. And I remember they could only put in $2,000 a year. I remember all that. Then I remember it starting to escalate up. So it's interesting when you say, man, I was around during these times. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gone pretty quick.
Yeah, and it is a good tool, because when we talk about diversifying portfolios, we talk about stocks and bonds and different types of investments to grow for the long haul. But one of the things that wasn't focused on as much, because people just put money away in their 401ks. That was what the goal was, right? When they were created, not that long ago either, in 1980, people really started to pile money into those 401ks. And those were all free tax dollars. So we saw people go into retirement with lots of money in these investments, but they had to pay tax to get it out.
Yeah, they always have to dance with the IRS every time they have to want to do something.
Yeah, so you do. You play those things of, do we want Social Security to become taxable? All these things that you don't think about. So the Roth as a tool has been great. And we've done some planning with this too, because a lot of people, with the change of rules of not having to take a required distribution, this is a great year to talk to your financial advisor if you're used to paying tax on that and maybe doing a Roth conversion.
Right. We've done a lot of those this year.
Yeah, because it does pay the tax because it's part of what you've done. Maybe reduce it a little bit. Take a tax holiday, I guess you call it, for a little bit. But convert some of those funds. You may never use them, but most of a lot of clients have a focus on passing on to heirs. And Roths do pass on tax-free, too.
Yep. It's a great... great way to pass on your wealth and a great way to give them a better gift than almost
so
anything else.
Call your advisor. Talk to him about this. It may make sense. If you're using it for income, don't stop taking your required distribution just because you don't have to. If it's part of your income flow, continue to take it. But if you're doing some tax planning at all, call and say, hey, what do you think about this?
And remember, if you're going to contribute, you have to have earnings in the year that you contribute. So if you're retired and you're not working, you go, oh, that would be great. Let's open a Roth IRA. The downside of that is you have to be working or be self-employed. Rental income doesn't count. You have to have that income.
Earned income, not passive. Yeah. And the same with IRAs. You can't contribute to IRAs either. Yeah, and over 70 and a half or 72 now, because they did change the age to start required distributions, you cannot fund IRAs.
No, now you can.
You changed the IRAs
that
as well. That's
changed,
right. You told me that. Yep.
Changed in December.
Yep. So there, I know. It's like everything changes all the time. If you have earned income, you can still fund these. But the bad thing about it is if you put it in, you still have to take your required distribution.
Right.
It's kind of, they can kind of offset each other.
Right.
So make sure it makes sense. Don't just put it into the IRA to immediately have to pull it right back out.
Right. That's why paying attention as they make these changes is really important, because they made some significant changes this last time.
They really did on a lot of things. We were going through the tax bracket, too, because with the tax cut that went through in 2018, it was funny how every bracket went down a little bit, but the amount of income changed significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very interesting how all these things work out. The tax holiday that they're doing now, where you don't have the payroll tax for a few months, but then you have to pay it back next year. Make sure you understand what you're doing.
Right. If you get an option for that, really think that through, because just having to pay it back in 6 months doesn't make much sense to save it for six.
Right. All right. We're going to have to wrap up the show. I think we're running close on time here. We thank you for joining us. We always love being here. You can reach us during the week at petsofinancial.com or give us a call at 853-2000. We've had that number forever. So just give us a ring. We'd love to talk with you, and we'll talk with you the next time we're here. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Money Matters is live every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, certified financial planner, Dave Petso. If you have questions, please contact Dave through the Petso Financial website. Replays of this program are also available under the Media tab.